Thank you. Hello, and welcome to the Spooky Chris Podcast.
That was for old times.
And I can't even say, like, for the people who don't understand, because there's really, you're the only one that listens. You're the only one that listens. That's very sad for me. Hi, I'm the aforementioned Spooky Chris. I am Chris Ringler, author and ne'er-do-well and such. You can find myself at SpookyChris.com and all my podcasts and such. And my special guest today is the one and only Paul... Goblin Pants Canellis.
Yes. That's my new nickname. That's what I want to be known as from now on.
I don't know what goblin pants are look like, but...
It sounds scary.
Arr, ye have a +4 goblin pants. Roll again.
Hi, Chris.
Hi. Well,
wanted to do this for a while.
Welcome to my little dungeon.
And this dungeon is really cool.
Why, thank you.
You can't see it in listener land, but it's awesome. It's got tons of really cool horror and pop culture ambiance everywhere.
I need to put more posters up.
Yes, because you have some really awesome posters in the hallway, too.
Yeah, but I think I have more cool ones to put up. I just have to do that thing.
Anyways, I love it.
Well, thank you, sir. And I love you.
Aww. Thank you for listening. Have a good night.
And that's a wrap. Now we're going to go into the smooth sounds.
So what were we talking about?
I thought we could, and I think it fits both of our interests, talk about, especially right now, with talk of the trouble with TCM, the Turner Classic Movies. And Warner Brothers kind of fooling with it and making it seem as if it's not even, it's less than a priority, and it's more of a, we're going to appease Scorsese and Spielberg and Paul Thomas Anderson, who they brought in. So they had, for those who may not know, it's a film channel. It's on kind of a more, it's a higher tier cable channel, which is a bummer because I had that for the longest time. And then they're like, oh, we're going to bump it to a higher tier.
It was such a bummer.
And they run old, it's not even just classic movies. It's movies from, I mean, in the last few years to the first movies ever made. And it's always been, you know, very popular with Hollywood and stuff. And
they run these great blocks.
Too. Yeah.
Just like the block programming is so fun. Anyway.
They do a great job, of kind of, and it's neat because it's like back in the day, because they show stuff that you're not always going to be into. Like I'm not always into what they're showing, but like it's cool because around like Halloween they show a ton of stuff.
Yeah. It used to be the number one destination for me.
Yeah,
it's, I was there all October, just watching TCM nonstop. I was watching reruns, you know, because you just put it on, you can have it on in the background.
Yep. Yeah, no, it's and it was, you know, they would give you kind of cultural perspective and
talking about it a little bit.
Yeah, oh yeah, like they'll introductions and all. It was really done with a lot of love and respect, and it's owned by Warner Brothers and blah blah blah. And Warner Brothers has been cutting a lot of things to get tax cuts, which is just the craziest and evilest thing like ever. Just like all of this, it's basically, I mean, you can imagine people at like the Louvre and it's like just throwing stuff into closets or into the fire just because, like, well, it's strange that it's better that this was wasted money and we can prove that this was wasted money than for it to exist. Because, and not make what you, like, it could make a little back of what you invested, but it's a weird idea, though, of just, like,
it is
throwing art away.
It is. It's terrible. It's terrible. And you'd think that they would learn the lesson, kind of, because it's not the same thing, but all those movies that burnt up in the vaults, you know, they're nowhere now.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be super dramatic and say these projects will be nowhere. But will they?
Well, it's the thing is, I don't.
You know, they're not going to be readily available. They're not going to sell them because they don't want to make profit.
Well, and I don't know. And I'm surprised people haven't dug in too much into the weeds on what the tax law is, because it can't be just that easy. Because at that point, it'd be just like, we're going to vault these for 10 years, and then we're just going to do something with them.
Right.
So it's got to be more. I mean. So at what point, like, does the government say, oh, you're going to release this? Well, we want the $300 million, you know, write-off that. We want that much. I don't know. I don't understand.
It seems like bad business, even.
It's bad government. And I'm shocked that with as many times as, like, Congress gets involved with, like, oh, there's a drug scandal in the sports. Like, we are going to investigate. We're going to have some big, for as many things as they want to invest in, how are they not raising heck trying, like, how is this a loophole that all of these giant companies that they make $200 million movies, like, without a thought. So how is it that we're going to let them, because they made a bad business decision, like, just write it off. Like, that's just crazy. And
it feels like it should be illegal.
Especially when, like, not to get into the politics of things, but especially when you look at, we don't want to let students write off their student debt.
No.
Which that's actually beneficial for the society, because it puts people in the job space. It creates, like, taxable income, blah, blah. But, like, this is...
I didn't even think about that. That's a really good point, though.
But, like, that's a huge sticking point. Like, no, we can't let them do this, but we're letting these companies write off. Like, okay, let students write off their debt as a tax.
Yeah. Yeah, where does it stop?
Yeah. Well, it stops at, like, once you get to the executive, like, those doors. They're like, yeah, but that's different. It's weird that, I mean, and you can't fault... you really can't fault the studios for doing it, because it's good. Unfortunately, in American capitalism, it's a good business. Like, much like bragging about, like, oh, I got away without paying taxes. It's considered that's considered a good thing. It's like, ha, you get one over on them.
Yeah. Well, we even had a president that was bragging about
it. Well, I didn't want to bring that up. But I guess this is my podcast, so I guess I can.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah.
It's the elephant in the room.
Yeah, so
it's, I mean, that sets the standard. Like, this is a really rough precedent.
Yeah,
because it's going to filter over into every creative thing. If it starts right here.
Oh, yeah. Like, how many... So, what happens when, I don't know, Tom Clancy writes a book and they decide... Oh, well, okay. So, all right. So, we'll pick Joe Smith. Joe Smith is a big name author or celebrity. They have this huge book that's going to come out. It's going to be great. They put a bunch of money into it, and there's a scandal.
Yeah.
And they're like, crap, we paid them $1 million, and now there's a huge scandal. We are going to take a bath on this.
Yeah.
We can just put this back in a drawer and take a write-off.
And nothing lost.
Yeah. And that's, I mean,
Joe Smith doesn't get to talk about his basketball career.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the easiest one I can think of, because it's not like Stephen King is going to, they're going to put, like, as I say, Tom Clancy, but I would think the only thing I could think of, because you might have diminished, like, you could say Tom Clancy and they just, like, make it, I mean, because we're at a point where AI is going to start making, like, the kind of the business decisions, like, where it's like they're going to look at, like, the ledgers and stuff, like, Tom Clancy has not, you know, has diminishing returns.
That should probably be looked at as well.
Legality. Which I say Tom Clancy, and I think Tom Clancy's dead. I'm trying to think. I'm James Patterson. James Patterson is I meant. So, but yeah, like, say, oh, it was diminishing returns. So maybe, like, his last three books that he owes us on the contract, we just put in a drawer. We forget that they ever happened, and we write it off.
That feels like regression in every way, creatively and
just open theft. It is absolutely open theft, and it's crazy, because it really is a bad precedent, because we're, you know, when you look at society, we're teaching kids that if you make a fool enough of yourself on video, which is funny, because, like, kids kind of did that with Jackass and with America's Funniest Home Videos, but like now it's so immediate. Like there was a process with that. Like this is like you can get your phone, you can do something stupid and immediately within 10 minutes, like you can from idea to done, put it on the internet and it's out there.
It's so true. We just got monetized on YouTube. So like the kids, you know, they used to make these stupid videos and we put them on YouTube and they had their little channel and everything. Well, they managed to get enough followers to be monetized. So now I have to kind of go through and be like, yeah, don't post that.
Yeah.
Don't post that because, you know, it's going to make people angry or whatever.
Well, and as fathers of daughters, it's scary because like, because you want views and it's like, oh, well, if I wear this,
right,
it's going to get views. It's not a big deal because I'm just doing a dance. It's like, but it's like, who's viewing it?
Yeah.
And like, and unfortunately, it's like, what? Can someone capture that image, like that video, and do something with it? Like it's,
and they can.
Yeah, it's, yeah. Oh yeah, everything. Like, I mean, even Snapchat, there was, because Snapchat, the big thing was like, oh, well, you send these messages and no one knows. Well, now, and if you did like screenshot it, it would tell the other person. Well, now there's apps and stuff that'll go around it, or there are ways to get around these things. Like, and there's plus, always,
even Snapchat, you can do stories now for the public. It's not even like a friend thing anymore.
Our nephew, my wife and I, it's her direct nephew, but like my inherited nephew, he met his girlfriend on Snapchat. Like he had all of these girls. He's a sports kid and he had like supposedly over 100 girls that were messaging him on Snap. And I'm like, how? In my mind, it's just like, I don't understand how that worked. Like how, I've never been on modern dating apps and stuff, so I don't understand how that works. But in this like, I literally thought it was like, I am friends with Paul. So I see Paul's contact and I can send Paul a message. I know Joe Smith. I can see, like, I didn't know it was like Jane Jones can see that I have a Snapchat and be like, ooh, that's a cute picture. Like, it's weird. Like Instagram, I can see that, but.
My second oldest daughter, Audrey, earlier today, and she said that Snapchat is completely different than it used to be.
Well, I'm sure it probably morphed because of between TikTok and Instagram.
Yep.
That's what's popular. So it's got to like, boop. It's probably my guess. It's Instagram. If Instagram and TikTok were a chat app, is probably what it is.
It's Snapchat.
So that's my guess. That's,
I think you're probably right.
That's what makes sense.
I had a thought earlier when you were talking about, oh, they could just take his contract and shelf it.
Yeah.
And this is something that you haven't been able to do in a long time. But I had a friend in the 90s. He had a band, and he got signed to Geffen. And so, you know, he was a nice guy, so he came over to our band practice, and he was like, I got signed. And, like, as soon as, you know, we get things rolling and we get a tour and stuff, I'm going to put in for you guys to come out and open for us and all that, you know. So he's like super excited, and I'm like really happy for him. Nicest guy ever, and like a legend around the Flint, Michigan area. They took his album and they shelved it. But like he had this record and all these hopes and everything, and no one's ever heard one track from this album.
Well, I mean, we saw with Kesha. She had a dispute with her manager, and she couldn't record it. I mean, like, she could, but it would be for a contract she didn't believe in. So, like, so she, her career was shelved. I mean, Taylor Swift lost control of her music. That's why she's re-releasing everything, like, re-recording it all. Like,
when the artist stops having any power at all, it's regression.
Oh, when you look at artists only make money now if they go on massive tours.
Yeah.
You know, and again, it would be different. Like Taylor Swift is the Stephen King, we'll say, of pop music right now.
Yeah.
Or you could say her or Beyonce, whatever, whoever's the bigger, but right now, with the tour and stuff.
Yeah.
But,
people are comparing her to,
I mean, and what's funny is like, and it's, she's a smart businesswoman because like
someone
doing
there.
It right after COVID, like people were so desperate for like this, for this like connection and this big thing.
Anything to be a light.
Yeah. Or in Beyonce, I mean, it's not like Beyonce saw her tour and like jumped on the bandwagon. No, like, no. She must have been thinking the same thing. And that, like, all of these performers were desperate to get out to make money. And those are two that make money on sales and stuff, because I'm sure their contracts are like, great, so you know who I am. Right. I'm Beyonce. Like, and you want my records, so how much are you going to give me? Like,
yeah.
Like, that's probably a 70-30, whereas Suicidal Tendencies, that's probably a 60-40, 65-35.
The record company was paying for all of that.
Yeah.
And then they would have more control over what the artist did, you know, where they played, everything. So now, someone like that, like Taylor Swift, has a lot of say in what's happening. Like Madonna, all the say.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Well, and they're desperate to, it's like, great, great, great. That's cool if you want to record a record, but if you could really get on tour. Because yeah. We want to sell t-shirts. Yep. We want to sell, yep. like.
That's what, even at the level that I'm at with Lords of October, we're kind of glorified t-shirt salesmen.
But I mean, then that's the I mean, you and I both learned this as book people, is you need the extras to bring them in, and like, that book may be $5 and somebody doesn't want to spend $5. Ooh, I got a sticker for $1.
Yep.
Oh, I've got $1. That's a cool sticker. Like, it's, yep. You have to, it is everything has become side hustle. Mm-hmm. So it's that extra income.
Even your own band within it is a side hustle. And it's more likely to stay that way with these kind of laws not being looked at.
Mm-hmm.
Forever.
Yeah, it's...
Because you already think about Spotify and crap like that, how many millions of plays you have to have just to make...
Oh, well, that gets you back to YouTube, too. It was like,
yeah.
You know, some of the people that I've followed stuff, like, because they send out, like, little... Once you have X amount of subscribers, they'll send you, like, YouTube sends you, like, a little, like, here's a...
Right.
Not a trophy, per se, but, like, here's a, boop, you have this amount, and... Like, it's, you know, as you've seen with your kids, like, the monetization, like, or even with the movie we worked on and the big dreams that the director had of, like, oh, I'm going to put this on streaming and I'm going to make all this money. Right. It's like, it is not even, I don't even know if it's pennies on the dollar.
Yeah,
like,
it's barely.
I know one filmmaker who has his, like, most of his work is on Tubi. And I don't know if it's streaming anywhere else. I know it's on Tubi. And he said he makes enough that he can keep doing what he does.
That's cool.
But, like, I mean, he has a day job.
Yeah.
But he can't
quit his day job.
Yeah. But he can keep doing what he's doing. So he makes a little bit of money. But, like, that's, I mean, luckily, that's the one good thing for people like him with the kind of changing how we are viewing habits. So we're streamers. Like, so we sit there and we'll just, like, and we, like, when we were kids, yeah, you'd sit there and watch a movie and then pull the VHS out and go and put it in. But, like, you can, like, that, there is, like, suddenly you're off the couch. Well, then you got to go to the bathroom. And then you want to get right. food. And then, like, you go and you get distracted by something else. This, you can literally sit on the couch, play a movie, arrow over, and play the next movie.
Have DoorDash bring your food.
Yeah, and, like, get up and go pee and go do whatever you're going to do. And the movie can keep playing because you didn't pay anything for it on Tubi. Right. You're like, I don't care.
Yeah, who cares?
Like, so it's because you're...
More disposable than ever.
Yes, you don't feel like... Like, it'd be interesting to find out how much of movies and TV, these TV shows, stuff that we stream and, like, and binge, how much we're absorbing. Because it's so... We feel like, I'm not even paying for it. It's free. It's like, but we're paying for the service, which... So we are paying for them. It's just, right. It doesn't feel like a rental, like a $3.99 for a VHS. That's like,
right.
If you didn't watch that.
Reward. It's all reward.
Yeah, because it's like, back in the day, like, you don't watch that movie, you're like, oh, man. Yeah. And then, like, you'll keep it another day.
$2 for this, I didn't even finish it.
Yeah, and then you're going to keep it another day.
Yep.
And, like, well, I got to finish, you know, I got to watch this thing. Yep. It's stupid. They got more money out of you.
When I had the Halloween documentary that I did on Prime streaming for a while, and it was decent, you know, like, it wasn't nothing. I couldn't even make another movie from the money, but it was interesting to see, because I think, you know, with rentals, when people would rent it, we would get a cut of the rental. We weren't selling them on there, but when people would rent it, you'd get a cut of the rental, and I think we made like you know, like $60 or something like that from 400
rentals.
So, like, you know, it was something, though.
Yeah.
And then they shut that down where you couldn't.
Which is so weird to me because it's, like, it's weird because it's essentially free content for them. Like, yeah. That's the funny thing about all of this stuff that's being pulled.
And they're making money off of it.
Yeah. Like, because to me, like, any of these streamers, like, you want to have quality control. I get it. But for, like, Prime, you just have another section of the video store, basically, like the independence section, like the underground section, so that you, that's your banner. That's your, like, no, this isn't our A-list stuff. This isn't the banner stuff. This is the independence. This is the, you know, but to me, it's like, that's just like, we have a million titles on here. It doesn't matter if, like, 400,000 of them are 60-minute found footage movies that all suck. It's still a million. Like, that's what people look at. And that's anybody who's ever had to work with, you know, white-collar business and stuff and looking at numbers, they always do that, like, because it impresses us. Yeah. Like,
it's volume.
Yes. We have a million plays. Well, did people actually listen to the record? Well, I mean, they turned it on and walked away.
Right.
So, are they a fan? And that's honestly, that should be cool. You have a million plays. Are they a fan? Well, I mean, they like that song. Are they a fan of you? Well, no, they like that song.
Right. Yeah.
Because if they're a fan of you, they'll buy more products.
Yeah.
If they're a fan of the song, they'll buy that song, and that's song, it. And like, yeah. Yeah, you made your money, but there's nothing else.
So it's already trickled into even your creative thought. In a way, I would say some people, well, the way that we look at it is marketability,
mm-hmm.
which we didn't before, but now we're five albums in, so you have to think about it, or you're just wasting your time making CDs.
And a greatest hits album you have to think of.
Yeah. Greatest shits. But now you have to think in terms of, you don't make an album like you used to. So, like, we made two concept records. Which is almost hilarious in this day and age to have a concept album, because people are just going to listen to the catchiest thing on there. They're not, you know, the average person.
Yeah.
Some people will like it. But most people are going to, it's all singles. It's all a song. What's the summer song? What's, you know.
Well, what's funny is I think further away from, like, the radio pop stuff, you get that. Because, like, I can think of two different bands that I kind of like that kind of have, well, but they have modern, like, brand new concept albums, and it's because they're on the fringes, and they're bands as it's not like they're heavy metal bands. It's not like you're gonna, unless you listen to XM or maybe Spotify,
right.
You're not gonna just randomly hear, like, I mean, they released singles and stuff still, but, like, it plays as a whole. So you can do it that. I think that's the thing, is you can do it that way. I mean, The Wall, they cut up like that. It's just a matter of. But yeah, it's like
it's all this stuff will affect the creative aspect of it. And if you don't care about that, then it's just going to keep getting further and further that way.
Yep.
Like, there's always going to be, you know, a niche for some stuff. But the more creativity is kind of frowned upon with financial reward, the less creative everything will be. And most people in the higher ups are okay with that. That's what's frustrating about it. So you're going to get less and less cool shit. You know what I mean? And just a bunch of cookie cutter, which we already kind of see.
Yeah.
It's kind of cookie cutter.
What would be, it would be fun to, you know, to have a career kind of like, well, because Beyonce did a concept album, basically. Because,
mm-hmm.
like, it'd be fun to be at that level. Where you could literally do anything you want. Which, I mean, I guess conversely, Taylor Swift just decided, like, I'm gonna re-record all my old albums.
Yeah.
Like, I have my own studio. I'm gonna just that's what I'm gonna do. Like, I'm gonna do what I'm gonna do. Which, I mean, Max Cavalera did that recently with he's the original singer for Sepultura, and he left and he has his own thing. But he went back with his brother, I think, and other people, and re-recorded their first Sepultura album. Like, because it was, and it was more of a, because it's funny, because Roger Waters re-recorded, what the heck album? Oh,
Roger Waters.
Yeah, is it Dark Side? Not Dark Side.
It wasn't one of the bigger ones, was it?
Yeah, he just re-recorded it. I don't know if he's released. Because basically he's just him thumbing his nose like, I don't like those guys anymore. I think they're jerks. I'm going to give you my, it was my band. I'm going to give you my version. And I can't remember what record it was.
And their fans are already tribalistic.
Yes.
Cut right down the middle.
But like with the Sepultura, it was more of a, no, like I love that stuff. It just sounds like crap. And it's kind of what Mr. Bungle did.
Yeah.
It was like their original album, their first album, it was only, you know, like an independent, way independent release, and so they re-recorded it now because it's like, oh no, like we like that stuff now. We actually like
just wants to sound better.
Yeah, like in kind of just you know, relive though, because they recorded it when they were teenagers, so relive this kind of midway through life. So I mean, you know, people are doing it, but you're right. Like it's not like there's a lot of record labels that are going to be like, that's a great idea. We absolutely support that. Here's a bunch of money to do this. It's going to be like,
you're going to have to do it despite that.
Yeah. It's going to be like, well, if you guys want to do it, like your budget's cut in half for this record. Yeah. Like you're going to have to like foot the bill somewhat. And you know, if you go on tour with it, you're going to have to play a bunch of hits too. You know, everybody's kind of got to, I mean, because there's,
you got to play the game.
Yeah, there's a bunch of, there's heartbreakingly a large amount of bands I liked that basically they couldn't get like a label, so they broke up. Like there's one band I liked called Mindfunk, who the last album they did was a European release and it never released in the States because they couldn't get distribution, so they just broke up. And then like, I mean, but you know personally, like that happens all the time, like because there's a point where it's like, can I fit a band into my life and get a job and do all this other stuff, like, or am I gonna risk it and like find some kind of money for this and just like throw caution to the wind and hope for the best, and if it doesn't work out, I'm
okay.
Yeah, like I'm, but or I just,
I'm not.
Yeah, or I risked everything and
right,
and it's just like I don't, I, it's interesting, and I'll get back to my initial point, but it's interesting because so you and I are self-published authors. And Kindle does something called Vellum now, where they're selling stories by the single. And it sounds cool.
Right.
But it also feels like selling cigarettes by the single. Because
it's a single.
It's because then it's like, will they buy the whole, you know, they're buying a single. Are they going to buy the record?
Right.
Like you made, you know, it's interesting because
it's the book version of that.
Yeah. And it's what's funny is, like my books are all priced to sell, so $3, $4, $5. If I sold a story for $1, that's, I mean, it's great,
right?
Like I absolutely would want that, but like I don't want to do single, you know, like you want to do a bigger work.
Yeah.
Are people gonna move to the book?
Right.
And it's,
they're gonna take it and be like, oh, I really enjoyed that. Let me see what else this guy has.
So it's weird. The art of all of these things is kind of being taken apart, and it's being just literally ringed out into how much money this can make. Like, well, if you're not going to sell a whole book, just do a story and sell it. And again, like, I think it's a great release thing in that, like, if the Lords, the band you're in, decided we're going to do a Christmas song. A weird horror Christmas song, and you release it, and it's just a one song.
We talked about doing that.
And it's you know, $1.99, mm-hmm. $5, whatever, like for that single, and like you're just reaping that reward.
Yeah.
And that's great to do that.
But that would be a creative decision too.
Yeah. Like, I mean, because if I had a huge fan base, that'd be fun to do, like, oh, hey, here I have this new story. I don't know what I'm ever going to do with it. Like, you can have it. Like, or imagine Stephen King did that. He kind of has.
Yeah.
Like, I'm trying to think, was it The Plant? Like, one of his stories, I don't know if it was The Plant, because I thought The Plant was just for friends. But he had a story that he was releasing kind of that way.
And he lets people make the dollar
movies. Oh, my gosh. I'm trying to think of the name of the, it's called The Shawshank Redemption. The other Death Row.
Green Mile.
Like, people don't realize how that was released. Like, I worked at a convenience store when it was released like that. Like, it was released in, like they did in the days of, kind of, Dickens and stuff, where it was like little chunks.
Yeah.
And it was like over the course of 5 weeks.
It was interesting.
Yeah, like you would get over those 5 weeks, you would get the novel. But like every, so it was like,
And there's a lot of that going on now on Kindle and different reading places where people are releasing, I guess, webisodes.
Well, but see, and then you wonder how much of it is genuine and how much of it is making it up as you go along. Like, I'm just going to I just want money and I'm going to keep like, so like the story would have died after four of these, but I need money.
Right. I don't really have anything else for this, but I'll come up with some.
And it's interesting how every aspect of artists have become, I mean, you've always had to do your own promotion and blah, blah, blah. Like you should, but like how we've all had to become performers now, like in every which way, and salespeople, and not necessarily because we want to, it's but because, and I'm happy for self-publishing because it's how I've got my stuff out there. I think it's great, but it's just, it's hard to, because you're competing with people that have money for, you know, have to promote it and to like, and you're getting publishers that are basically kind of self-published publishers, which I say this as we put it, but I mean like, but higher end, like they've put out 20 books, but they're still at that kind of a level where they don't have an office. They just,
right.
And so you're competing with them and they have a name they've earned, or, you know, people that are just very loud, or they can perform, they have a persona. Mm-hmm. And they can, because, you know,
if you wrote the greatest book of all time and no one would even know it.
Yeah.
Because it's going to get swallowed up in this.
Unless you figure out how to promote it.
Yeah.
Like, and then it's like, well, but how? Do I do a video? Do I do this? And it's like, then you're just another, you know, it's
so frustrating sometimes.
And I mean, like, you know, it's interesting. Yeah. So, but after half an hour, I'll dovetail us back to, so my initial thought. So to go all the way back with TCM had been, a safe haven for cinema fans. And for many, it was, if you can't afford to go to film school, you have a film school right there you can turn on and see the greatest films ever made. And kind of, you know, to some degree, they would deconstruct them and talk about like, oh yeah, like the way Wells shot this and that and, you know, whatever. And talk about themes. And you can kind of, because I was thinking about it earlier, could you hand someone a camera who's never seen a movie and see, it'd be interesting to see what they do, but they wouldn't understand necessarily. They could tell a story how they would tell it, but it wouldn't look, it would be the experimental. And we have experimental movies that it looks like, you know, they don't
know what they're doing.
Well, they don't follow like a strict kind of ABC.
Right.
So then, you know, it's a matter of, you know, what's the difference between someone, you know, going to a film school and being able to absorb what they see. And like, you know, I wouldn't know a lot of deep film jargon, but I can tell what, you know, the elements that make a good movie, like, you know, like how it should look, how it should sound, how it should, you know. And so what I was wondering is if it's not more, again, as you and I both made shorts and stuff. I don't know if you've ever made a feature.
You just a documentary.
Okay. Oh yeah. 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 Okay. But how, if I would say, I think there's more to learn by watching the super independent movies and the like Poverty Row movies, more to learn on how to make movies and how not to make them than you learn from a Martin Scorsese, Steven Spielberg, because you're learning, instead of learning from someone who has literally, like, you know, Quentin Tarantino, obviously you can learn tons of stuff, but you're learning from someone who already, he has, you know, these are filmmakers who have, you know, every tool you could ask for.
Yeah.
Name a lens, they can have it. Name like, oh, I want this editor. They'll probably, generally speaking, they can probably just about pick an editor they want to work with. Like a composer they want to work with, a lighting, whomever they want, they can just shy of pick and choose.
Right down the line. Yeah.
So it's different than like when we made a movie with that schmo, where it was like, you know, basically anybody that would work for free, and we kind of, you know, got together and like all worked together.
We did that.
Yeah.
And like a couple of the only people that really got away with that are Kevin Smith and Tobe Hooper. Like, where you're like, oh, I'm going to set this shot up and I'm going to actually try to have this nice shot that's going to, you know.
Yeah.
But if we were to go and do that, if you're trying to emulate Texas or Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and you're like, oh, I'm going to go into the swing set and do what Tobe Hooper did, it's not going to be the same. It's not going to work out. So, like, taking shots from Orson Welles or something, it's not going to look good in your movie. It's not, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, and
you can taste an aesthetic over, you know, learning certain things like that. Like, your setup shot is just going to look really weird.
Well, I mean, just look at Evil Dead. I keep bumping this thing. You're like, I keep fidgeting around and you're just chilling out. But what is the sequel, you know, the scenes that are the most famous? And that is the, like, like the demon scene.
Right, right.
And they figured it out. Like, they put a camera on a basically what, board, and they kind of like carried or moved it through the forest stuff real quick. And they, could they have done all that with a dolly? Of course they could. Or with whatever, you know, a bunch of other things that are available. They didn't have the money, and you, how do you do that, like, in the woods? Like, for anyone that has ever, so dolly shot is a moving shot. It's where the camera moves. Well, to have a dolly, you need, it's a basically almost like a train. It's on a track, and it has to move along a track. So imagine you have to clear forest and then lay a track and then put this. So it's just, it's easier to throw it on a board and create something like that's unique. Argento, some of the really cool stuff that he did in his earlier years is the way he wanted to shoot things. They had to kind of create lenses and ways to shoot them because it didn't exist, because he just had that kind of a vision. But I feel like embracing your limitations is the best thing. I mean, you and I have seen so many movies. Just last year, when I did the film festival I did last year, some of the movies that I got, and I felt terrible for them because they were trying to tell a story, but they couldn't, their vision didn't match up with whatever budget they had. So they leaned, like, it wasn't, they slept on like digital effects. So, and they were not good digital effects.
That's more distracting.
Yes. And it's, there's,
obviously the opening Halloween shot with the dolly and everything.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, so brilliant. But we decided we're going to do that. We're making a movie and we're going to do that. Something like that. Opening tracking shot that just goes through everything. So we used a shopping cart and we were trying to take it through. Have someone sitting on the shopping cart. We're taking it through, try to do this all in one shot. And we hit the sidewalk, a big bump, and the guy goes flying over. We're like, all right, that's stupid. Plus, it's not smooth at all.
Yeah.
Because it's a shopping cart. So you don't use that. You know what I mean? Like, we didn't, well, we got that. That one's in the can. You know what I mean? You have to go back and not use that. You have to figure out something cheaper. I know we're getting kind of off the point.
But it's almost the point is that, so in watching what doesn't work, and not like in a snarky way, like, oh, I see what they wanted to do. I see what they're trying to do. Like with the last short film I made, which is years ago now. The first one. The first one we did together.
Okay.
Where we had sound issues.
Yeah.
And it was, so I shot half the movie and it was near a highway and it just didn't work. And I had to reshoot it. And like the cast was like turned over. Well, I shot another part and it was again near a highway and it was just wasn't great. So someone we know, came in and fooled with the sound. Now, is it something I could have done? I guess he knew what he was doing though.
Right.
And it sounds better.
Mm-hmm.
Does it sound amazing? No, but like,
it sounds better.
It polished a turd.
Yeah.
Kind of. So, and that's what, you know, I had the materials and the ability that I had, and it's.
You have to do the best with that.
And we are in a unprecedented time in that Like, you can go, I mean, you and I could take our cell phones and shoot a beautiful movie that's going to look too clean, but then you can download an app probably to give it a film look. And, you know, I mean...
that's what I do with everything now. I shoot everything on this thing.
Well, I mean, it makes sense why. It's because it's... For what we use them for, phones are extraordinarily expensive. Yeah. But then it's like, it's not a phone. It's also
like a movie camera.
Well, and it's a regular it's your camera for your family. Mm-hmm. It's a video camera. It is like the internet. It is like your email. It is like so many but it has more to it than just a phone. But yeah, like they have put so much money into these phones as far as like the tech to make movies that you can. I always blank on people's names. I can't even think of the director that made Sex, Lies, and Videotape. But that he does stuff now.
Yeah.
He's done a couple movies on iPhones.
Yep.
And you'll see that. And it's funny, too, because it's not like you never hear, like, yeah, I shot my phone on a Galaxy. It's always an iPhone. Like, there's still, like, kind of a cachet. And I'm sure it's quality to some degree, but it's still a cachet. Like, I shot it on an iPhone. And it's not like.
When it gets to that point, it doesn't.
Yeah, it's like it's not.
It's all about frame rates and shit like that. Like, we shot our music video on this phone, on the Android. The last two short films I made, I shot on the Android. You do all the editing, like you said, clean it up.
Yep.
The one music video, I did special effects with the Android.
Really?
So you can do almost anything that you can think about that you used to would have had to have a camera for.
Yeah, and it's a weird head trip, because when you think of, like, back when we were kids and you had to use, like, VHS camera and stuff, like, if it wasn't in, like, an in-camera effect, like, so a live effect.
Yeah. Because we're shooting, hit and pause.
Yeah, like,
go to the next scene.
Even editing.
Editing,
yeah.
Right there.
Editing, you like, it was funny. So, I remember making a film when I was in college for, at 18. We made a movie. And I, for Christmas, got a editing bay that Sharper Image made. And we used it once. And it was just a step up from... two VCRs, but that's how you'd have to do it. Would be two VCRs to edit things, unless you did it live in camera. So, like, the idea of you couldn't just, you know, blip in a special effects and stuff. It's live, and if you screw it up, then you have to kind of just, like, you know, rewind, and it either looks like it looks, or you rewind, and, you know, it's
yep.
So it's
hope for the best.
Yeah. Whereas now, and it was funny. Listening to Mick Garris, the podcast, the other day, they were talking about the difference between film and kind of digital and stuff. Like, the idea that you can literally just hit record on digital stuff now and just let it run forever. Yeah. But as you know, that can also make it difficult, because then it's like, unless someone is properly, like, this is take one, you know, cut.
God.
This is take two, cut. Like, and everything's labeled and someone's putting that work in. Like, it's just chaos, because then you were watching hours and hours of, like, yeah, of...
I'm editing the new Lords of October video right now, and there's 260 small clips, or even some are longer.
Oh, boy.
And this video is going to be, like, 6 minutes long or something like that. So I'm just like, oh, my gosh. I shot a music video for a rapper. It was the first music video I ever did. It was a lot of years ago. And I didn't shoot enough footage. Because I was thinking in my head, okay, we need this shot here, and he'll be here, and then he'll be in the club, and these people are dancing, shot all this. Then it gets to the third verse, and I'm like, oh, I don't have anything. You know, I'm going to have to use some weird pickup shots and just little shots of him in between. So I did it, but I know when I watch it back, I'm like, oh, my God, that's when I didn't have enough footage. So now you go way overboard, and now there's like 6 hours of footage for a 6 minute thing.
Well, and that's, I mean, like, they always shoot coverage for feature films, and they go covered because it's a big thing. I mean, even at our level, like, getting all of these people together and making time and all this stuff, it's like, it's better to have stuff more footage to choose from,
right,
than less that you have to stretch. Like
the thing too now, like that was a music video, so for that you're not as worried about the sound, because it can be anything. I can just be like, all right, now you turn around and you know blah 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 and keep rolling.
Yeah.
But with the way we're shooting, sound is also going to be an issue.
Yep.
So if you have it on a separate, a separate track or whatever, you're not just using the in-camera sound. That's also all has to be labeled. It could just be so crazy.
Yeah, and it's funny because, I mean, again, back in the day, you had to have someone, well, we saw it kind of with what we were dealing with that guy, is you still, even with a crew, because we had a sound guy, like, yeah, that was questionably needed. Like, yeah. I, for at this level, I don't know that it was needed. It was cool to have, but we had lighting people,
yeah,
which, again, they did great work for what he ended up wanting to do. I don't know if it was needed. Mm-hmm. Like, but, like,
it felt more like, let's have what we think we should have.
Yes, it's like, what do movies have? Like, right, we need to have this stuff instead of, like, what do I need?
Yeah.
And again, like, everybody was great. I'm sure they did all, great work and stuff, but what was needed?
Do, like, you write that way? Like, say if you're writing, when you're writing your movies, do you write to what you have and what you can do? I didn't used to, but now I do.
No, because the most recent thing I have that I did, I just wrote. But in having written it, I can temper it when I write, if and whenever I get around to making it, I can temper that with, like, sure, what I can do with it. It's right, like, okay, great. Well, this, because it was, there's the warehouse in it, and there's, like, a special effecty kind of thing and stuff, and, like, you can start dialing some of that back to, from, you know,
yeah,
from,
because now, you're the only one that knows.
Yeah. And yeah. I mean, I think if you literally feel like you're going to make it and it's not a spec script, like, I guess it's different for spec script, but, like,
yeah,
if you really, then I think you're not foolish enough to, like, you know, a huge, you know, like, giant space battle, and there's a million, you know, ships, and there's plants blowing up. Oh, it's like 100 characters
looking at the skies, and there's lights going on.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, I think you have that kind of wisdom. But even, I mean, really, even that, like, there's stuff you can do that works around it. And I'm trying to think of the darn movie. Oh, gosh. It's essentially the zombie movie where it's a sound. And I can't think of the darn name. It's a weird name. But it's a guy, it's a radio guy, and it's him in the booth, and,
oh, yeah.
And I guess can't,
very effective,
and I can't think of the name of the darn movie. It's a Canadian movie,
just talking about that.
But the whole world is going to heck, and you don't see it. You just see kind of the edges of it, and there's a bunch of movies that do that.
It works well for that one.
Yeah,
there's a lot of tension in that movie.
Yeah,
we're writing something, we're coming up with something that might be sort of similar to that. Me and Glenn have been talking it out with Tyler, our friends of ours. And the thing is that you don't want it to be, you can't have the money shot. If you do, it can only be a little, you know,
yeah,
glimpse of it.
Mm-hmm. Like,
oh my God, that looks crazy. But you're not going to be out in the city, you know, with the roads tore up and, you know, monsters in the sky and everything.
Oh, for sure. You know,
what's the name of that? But
yeah, no, I did the same thing. It's like, oh man, I can't think of the darn name of it. The name that comes to mind is not that movie. So it's just,
what's the name you're thinking of?
Skinamarink. Which, yeah, it's not that, but it's a weird, like, word. That, it's
I was thinking Poughkeepsie Tapes.
No, it's a weird, it's
like that.
Yeah, it's a weird, like,
yeah. Whoever's weird listening is like, it's this, you idiots.
Yeah. But yeah, so it's that, but
Glenn's like, it's this.
I don't think Glenn's ever,
I'm gonna make him listen.
Like I say, there's an audience of you. Bless your heart.
Hey, I like it. I listen to your podcast while I'm doing the dishes and stuff. This is great.
Hey, that's why they're.
It kind of makes me feel like we're hanging out.
It's, well, thank you. I'll start talking just to you.
Yeah, just do it. Now,
hey,
listen, Paul.
How you doing, Big Daddy?
You don't put this one on. I'm going to bed.
Paul, close your eyes. Start counting back from 10.
Crackling
rappers, so. I'll also do ASMR stuff.
Yeah.
Well, though it is funny, talking to sort of jump back to what we were talking about before, like the, how everything is changing, I have started to realize that I need to, I don't have it in me to put more effort into Kindle stuff because I just don't, because you literally have to like construct them differently almost. Yeah. And I'm like, I just don't have it in me to go, I'm almost word by word, but like I have to start thinking how to make sure that they're okay, because I wonder how, like, the way people are anymore, like they're more apt to get a Kindle because they can read it on their phone, they can read it on whatever, than to get a book. Now the people we speak to, and you know, are the people we're like reaching out to and stuff are still buying physical media and everything, but there's a point where it's like I mean, I guess it's good that we can still do what we do and move that direction, but
do you just take the?
I just throw it into like, yeah, like Kindle has something now that's like a little program that Kindleizes it, but yeah, I always just hope for the best.
I was a book that I edited for somebody, and I had to do all that, and it is so time consuming.
Yeah, I don't have it in me. I just don't like. I didn't.
It feels like lava when you start to do it. You're just like, oh, I already formatted this one.
That's the thing. It's like, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want
to. You had to find all these terms I didn't know anything about, and I probably have forgotten since then. I'm going to have to do it again next time.
Yep. Don't want to do all them things, which is, you know, one of the ABC reasons I don't sell any books. Yeah. choose a letter, and that's a reason. But yeah, I think though that there's, it's not something people talk about though, is the idea that you can really learn from these movies that are, you know, just shy of Poverty Row even, because you see, oh wow, they were able to do this, like on no budget. That's great. Like the one movie I always think of for found footage that is like that is Leaving DC, which I've sung the praises of, which, and it's essentially a. Yeah, it's a two-person show, and it's essentially a one-person show because that was a one-person carrying the movie. There's no special effects. There's no like person in a suit. There is no like big action sequence. It's all build, and it's all like acting, and it's all writing, and it's great.
It stays interesting, though.
Yeah.
You care what happens.
Yeah, and it's super creepy because they do like the filmmaker. Like the stuff they could control, like sound. So like they worked with sound stuff, and like that's great. I mean, you know, Paranormal Activity. Yep. A lot of that is like it's sound.
Willow Creek.
Oh, all. Brilliant. Yeah, absolutely. That's all like, and it makes me wonder if he ever had a point where he was like, which if people haven't seen it, Willow Creek is a Bobcat Goldthwait movie, found footage about Bigfoot. And it's funny because it plays as a almost satirical until
it's pretty funny
until the climax, and then you know
that it's not funny.
Yeah, it gets real.
That one's interesting too because they actually make you like the characters.
Yeah,
you're with them and you're kind of rooting for what they're doing. You know it ain't gonna end right.
Yeah. Yep. And I mean, in essentially the climax, dialogue.
Yep.
And it's you know,
but it still feels scary.
Yeah, because there's soundscape to it.
It's one to learn from.
Yeah.
Actually, all those ones that you named off, you could learn from.
Yeah. I mean, Blair Witch, like until they put tons of money into it to really, really, like it's for advertising, but to really punch up the sound and to really like, which is interesting because I wonder how, like I'd have to listen to the commentary again, but like, how much of it is deadening the sound and how much of it is bringing it up. But because they put a bunch of money, like they made it for, you know, very little money, quote unquote little money, but then fooled with the sound and stuff. It looks like a low budget movie, but it doesn't, like, it's one of those things you only notice a budget when you reach its limitations.
Yeah.
Like when the actors are poor actors because they, because you couldn't afford professional actors, or the sets are, you know, are not, don't match the film because you couldn't afford, or, you know, it's supposed to be set in the 70s, but they're clearly wearing modern, you know, it's stuff that they couldn't overcome in their budget. But generally, like, and I'm thinking, like, there's a movie called, have you ever seen Running Time?
I don't think so.
Running Time is a, I can't remember if it's Scott Spiegel maybe made it, but is a Bruce Campbell movie.
Oh, I was going to say.
And it is done in, quote unquote, real time. And it covers about 90 minutes.
Yeah.
And it is a heist movie with, like I say, Bruce Campbell.
Yeah.
And it's super effective because, you know, like Rope, they knew where to cut. Like Rope is the Hitchcock movie. It plays out as if it's one continuous shot, like all live. And you've seen movies that try to do that and stuff that they try to do that as best they can. But like, Running Time is like Rope. Is they you find the shadows kind of to cut, and they bring it up in the same place. And
hope there's no glitch.
Yeah, and it works. And it's a low budget movie, but like they didn't. And again, like it's not like you ever like buy into like, oh, it's this huge. But we're so trained to always need everything to be huge budgets and to be like, oh, we need all this big explosions. Real life isn't like that. Real life is low budget.
You know, it's funny because you know how they're talking about the Kraven movie? Kraven the Hunter?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So what I've always wanted and what I want even more now is just a movie where Kraven comes to New York and tries to capture Spider-Man, you know, hunt Spider-Man around New York.
Hey, friend. Chris here interrupting this spirited conversation because technology is a fascinating thing. The memory card ran out. So it's as if we were taping on our tape recorder and the tape just ran out. It was like, so, and I didn't notice till we were done. So unfortunately, you guys missed a whole chunk of conversation that Paul and I had, kind of last stuff we were talking about. You know, we were talking about movies again, and eventually made our way back to the core point of my thought that there's more to learn from independent films and kind of Poverty Row movies than there are from necessarily Hollywood movies. And again, I just to reiterate where I come from with that is just that, you know, like Mission Impossible, Casino, you know, I'm just trying to think of big movies that like off the top of my head. These big movies have all kinds of money behind them and opportunity. And movie making at the independent level is a lot of you are filming in a box, and as soon as you can, it doesn't mean you have to like it, and it doesn't mean you have to give up your vision. It means you have to tailor your vision to what the box is. And, you know, you need to respect and appreciate that box. You have to go like, okay, I don't have the budget for, you know, to show this giant space war. What do we have a budget for? We have a budget for some actors, so we can show reactions and some flashing lights, and there's always expectation from what the audience has, and you always have to deal with that. The audience, you can't play to the audience that needs to. I need to see a space battle, and I need to see giant mod, like, because the thing is if the actors are good, if you do everything else well, that will convey the feeling, and they'll still be taken along with you. Now, you know, blockbuster movies are thrill rides. They are the roller coasters. And maybe the independent movies are tilt-a-whirls. But there's still thrills to be found on them. Are they the same? No, but they're kind of spending, in many cases, all of that money on those big things to kind of force you to be excited and thrilled because they're not focusing as much on the story. I mean, they try and this and that, but like the focus is on those thrills. Independent movies are forced to focus on the people, and then the thrills kind of come, they are thrills. They're like, oh, whoa. I just watched the movie Lovely Molly again. And it's interesting listening to the commentary. Like, there's a big reveal at the end, and it wasn't intended. And I think it... I love the movie for its reveal. I think it's my perfect version of it. But I see why they would have gone with another version. I see where it would have been really powerful. But that reveal, and again, like in the movie Underwater, the reveal, like, you see all the stuff, and then there's a big, like, bump, and like, oh. And it doesn't, you know, it could be anything. It could be an emotional reveal. Like, if you go and look at the movie Irreversible, the movie has its impact is because of the very end. And the very end is very joyous. But because of its joy, it's depressing as heck. And it's such a punch to the stomach at the very end. So it's really what it all comes down to is your ability and your skill and what you can do with what you have. And with work, you know, looking at the independent movies, you can see like, oh gosh, yeah, that's why you want a better actor. That's why you want maybe better lighting. That's why you want a better, you know, to figure out better sound. That's why you want, you know, you start to pick things apart. And again, you start to see like, ooh, I can't do that. How can I do it? That's what all of it is about, is how can you make it work? It may not be, you know, everybody would love to have infinite budget to make their movies with, you know, but sometimes you don't have that. But in that, you can take chances on things like someone who's an up-and-coming actor or someone who has never acted, who may just blow your mind, who may never have seen that in themselves, but your words bring that out of them, your direction. And it's better than you could have gotten from someone else. Like, it's raw. And it works because it's raw. So it's just something to think about. I always thought that was, you know, again, with the talking, when we talked about TCM, and the idea, you know, folks say that that's kind of, and it is, in a way, like a film school, because you see the masters at work. And it's important to see how the masters, like why they are masters. There are reasons, and you can dissect that. But to really kind of start on the path, it's good to know what doesn't work sometimes and what people did on low budgets to know where you got to start at. Friends, I'm sorry this podcast didn't get the finale it deserved. I thank Paul, that's Paul Kanellis. He is an author of many, many books. Look him up on Amazon. Paul Kanellis, he has a lot of books out. Great stuff. He is in the band Lords of October, and he puts out the awesome magazine Halloween Machine, and he's a great friend. And I thank him for popping by. I thank you, friend. If you want to know more about me and my books, go to spookychris.com. I will speak to you soon.
Not Spider-Man going and saving the entire world and fighting 85.